Until the Pulse nightclub shooting in 2016, the deadliest known attack at a gay club in U.S. history was an arson attack at a New Orleans gay bar in 1973. It was at a French Quarter bar called the Upstairs Lounge, and 32 people died in the fire. But many families didn't come forward to claim the bodies of the dead, and churches refused to hold funerals for some of the victims. Marilyn LeBlanc didn't even know her brother Ferris had died in the fire for 42 years until a Google search showed his name on a list of victims. Now, Marilyn and her family are trying to bring Ferris's body home. They believe he was buried with other victims. Skip Bailey is Ferris's nephew. He joins me from Tucson, Arizona. Skip, welcome.
Pleased to be here.
And your uncle had been missing since the 1973 fire. How did you find out that he had been a victim?
My mom came to stay with me around Christmas at the 2015 to hang out for my birthday, and she had heard from one other brother that there was something on the internet about Ferris, so she asked me to look him up, and I did a Google search on his name, and my computer lit up with all of the horrible facts of the Upstairs Lounge fire and his death, and that started the whole process.
That must have been unbelievably shocking to find that out.
It was. We'd always wondered what happened to him. We had no idea. Knowing what happened, it was good to know that we finally found out. But by the same token, it was so horrible to be burned alive. It's just unimaginable. And it was very, very devastating. I found it on the computer, and in tears, I went into the other room and told my mom. I said, "We know now what's happened." And we just broke down. And then I said, "You know what we have to do? We have to find him. And we have to bring him home. That's what our goal is."
So how did you go about trying to do that?
Well, on the internet search, I found out that there were a couple of books written about the fire. I reached out to those authors. There had been a documentary already done in like 2013, I think. So I reached out to that filmmaker, and there was one in process that was just about finished. I reached out to that filmmaker, and there was one that was filming still. So I just contacted everybody and told them who I was, and there'd been a big mystery about Ferris's family, and they were all pretty surprised and kind of in a way excited to find out that we did exist and that we wanted to find him.
And he is apparently in an unmarked grave, right?
Yes. His body was identified anonymously after the fire, and nobody in the family was ever contacted. And we never knew. Somebody who knew him from his time there recognized him by a ring that he wore. It was an antique spoon ring. And this person apparently contacted the officials and said, "Yeah, that is Ferris LeBlanc. I know who he is in that ring," because a lot of the bodies, I guess, were beyond any kind of identification. Mm-hmm. So since the body wasn't claimed, even though the local church, the MCC church in New Orleans, wanted to bury him properly, law wouldn't allow it. So he was buried in a potter's field in an unmarked grave with three unidentified victims of the fire at the same time. And it's still unmarked. Unfortunately, since Katrina, the coroner's office, as well as the Rest Haven Cemetery where he's at, have no more maps to show that area. Their maps only go up to P, and he's in Q32 from what Rest Haven has told us, and it's still unmarked. And basically, it looks like a cow pasture. There's nothing there that would indicate that this is a cemetery. It's got a cyclone fence around it and a locked gate.
What do you know about him and what his life was like?
Well, up to that point, he was my uncle. I knew him, my whole life until he disappeared about 1970. My earliest memory is visiting family, and he came by with his then partner, and he was driving this red MG car, and it was so neat. And I was about 4 years old, and he gave me a ride in that, and that really impressed me.
Yeah.
And he lived in San Francisco in the Bay Area. He was a hairdresser, licensed, and his partner and he had a salon, and they worked together and worked in that salon. And partway along, about mid-teens for me, I was becoming more and more interested in art, and he and his partner bought me some watercolors one time in a visit to family, and kept pursuing my art career, and they kept promoting that. And that was very close knit for me and him, because he always took care of me that way and was always showing a lot of interest in my art.
So what do you make of how this was all handled? You can't even imagine something like this happening at any time, but certainly not today, in today's world, with all the information that we have. But, you know, 1973, it was a different time.
Yes, it was. The aftermath of the fire, the way it was handled regarding the victims, their families, and friends, was horrible. They were treated like non-humans. I mean, mm-hmm. It was just a horrible way to treat people. Of course, we didn't know any of that. We didn't know he was even there. We didn't even know he was in New Orleans. We had no idea. And now, looking back and reading all the books and seeing what happened to him, that was an awful way to be treated. It's, you know, it's inhumane.
Yeah. There was originally a memorial to mark the 45th anniversary of the attack. Tell us about that.
That was very emotional for us. It was for all the victims, all 32. It was held at the only church in New Orleans who at that time in 1973 did have a service for the victims. Unfortunately, of course, we felt Ferris never had a service. So my mom and I and my wife and my stepfather, we went to New Orleans for that memorial service. And we felt in our own way that this was a service for Ferris, because he never got one in 73.
And now you've still got one task ahead of you, which is to actually find your uncle.
That's the main thing we've been fighting for three years, trying to find his gravesite so we can – he was a World War II veteran, so we want to rebury him with military honors where the families are.
So how close are you to doing that?
We think we're closer than we've ever been, but there still seems to be a lot of work to do. What's helpful is there is some news footage from 1973 of the actual burials, showing individual coffins and individual holes in the ground and with a priest administering last rites. It's only about 5 seconds, but that gives us information about the site, the location, and hopefully that'll help give insight to using modern technology, if we have to try to find him with, you know, radar or whatever and magnetometry and things underground. The footage that we saw has two gravediggers in there, and a lady who works at the coroner's office recognizes them as two brothers and thinks one of them might be still alive, and he might be able to walk to the spot. So the more people that we can get and more identification of location, that'll help us when we have to go to a judge and, you know, ask for permission to dig and try to find him.
You know, there are probably a lot of people listening to this who never even heard about this attack. And certainly in the wake of the Pulse nightclub shooting in 2016, this was, before that, the biggest attack on a gay club in U.S. history. What do you tell people? How do you explain this situation to people who had never heard about this attack before?
I just tell them that. For me, from my standpoint, my uncle died in a fire. It was an arson fire, but it was not a hate crime because it was one of the patrons who'd been kicked out who came back and torched the place. I don't think that it was really that much of a gay issue until afterwards, the way that the victims were treated by the city and the publicity and the media. At that point, there was a lot of negativity. But at the same time, now our story and our search for my uncle is just a humanitarian story. I don't think it matters whether he was gay or not. It's just trying to find somebody who deserves better treatment in death than he received.
That's Skip Bailey, who is the nephew of Ferris LeBlanc, who was killed in a fire at a gay club in the French Quarter in New Orleans back in 1973. And then they haven't been able to find his body ever since. Skip, thank you so much.
No, oh, thank you.
And Skip said in our conversation that the upstairs lounge fire had been started by a patron who'd been kicked out of the bar. That theory is commonly believed, although no one has been charged with a crime in connection with the fire.